Hatchby.
Okay.
I'm Landy. I'm an alcoholic.
Landy.
Oh, man. Thanks, Mark. I've only had about 30 minutes to think about it, so it's a good thing. You know, there's like 2 weeks or a month in advance you're thinking about it. But I'm really grateful to be here. And my sobriety date is April 7th, 2003. And it's been a great time. Merry Christmas to everybody. You know, I'm super happy to be anywhere right now. So I used to drink a little bit, and I was raised in a bar. My parents had a nice bar out here on the north end of town. And at like the 12 years old, I was stocking the bar. I was replacing the beer bottles, putting in new beer and whiskey, and I was around alcohol all my life. You know, everybody drank alcohol. You know, I watched the cook get fired from, my dad fired the cook because he's drinking cooking sherry. You know, I seen my parents drink all the time. All the customers drank, and I'm back here stocking liquor, replenishing whiskey bottles. And in those days, we broke them and recorded them. You know, it was a good job for me because I found out that I was in charge of all the liquor. And I could sneak bottles out, bring them back in and break them and write it down and get my booze, because they, you know, I couldn't stand above the counter at the liquor store. That wasn't working. So I really didn't start drinking until I was about 12 years old. And I had a Ford out in the desert, and it was well stocked. We had hot Budweiser and hot vodka. I figured out how to get into the cigarette machine with a clothes hanger, you know, a little crack in the glass. Candles, had some ambience out there in the desert. And that was back in the days when the helicopter used to fly around and chase us around in the desert and chase us on our mini bikes, because we thought we were bikers in those days. And, you know, alcohol was fun. You know, I was the coolest guy in seventh grade and had my own fort, well stocked, and we'd park our mini bikes out there by the fort and drink and smoke stale cigarettes and watch the world spin around, throw up, and do it again. I, I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. You know, I didn't know. I thought drinking was cool. I thought this is what you do. You know, everybody else did it. Everybody else drank. And I just felt that was what we were doing, you know. In school, my dad was really sick, and he taught me how to work. You know, I was out in the desert drinking, but I was working. He taught me how to work in the kitchen. You know, he taught me how to be a cook. I started out washing dishes, and then cooking, and doing. You know, I learned how to work. I also learned how to drink, but I learned good things too. You know, I learned good things. I learned how to work. My father passed when I was 18. His liver quit. You know, they called it ulcerated colitis. But, you know, I remember he used to lay in bed and drink. And I remember the guys from the Open Door, because Open Door was down over on beach, or somewhere. And I remember guys from AA coming to my dad's bed. You know, he'd lay in bed and have old granddad and drink. And I think dad's really sick. And he was, you know, because that's what alcoholics do. We drink. And that's just how that goes. I mean, I didn't. So I'll fast forward a little bit. I got married. I met this girl at Colorado River. She found out my parents owned a bar. I found out her dad had a still. And it was a great relationship. It started off with, you know, she had some stuff that, you know, I'd drink and go down and blow your top of your head off, you know. And she said she had more back at her house. And so we got married, and we had a couple children, and had a concrete business, and got busy, you know. It was... in the 80s, got my contractor's license in 1981, and Antelope Valley was booming, and B-1 bombers were flying, and things were happening. They were building houses like crazy, and And we, you know, I had a lot of work going on. We were building a lot of houses, and we had a crew. I had a crew. And I didn't hire you if you didn't drink. You know, everybody that worked for me drank, because that's how we do it, you know. And things got really, really good, you know. We were prosperous. We were successful. And we had two children. And, you know, drinking wasn't something that I used to do when I got home, you know. I mean, I drank as a kid, but, you know, I was able to get a business, go to work and be successful. But the more successful I got, the more I drank when I got home. And there was some outside issue stuff that enhanced my drinking because I could afford it. Things started to get a little bit crazy, you know. You guys might understand, you know. We get going fast, we drink a lot. But it got to the point where when I took a drink, all I could think about was wanting another one. You know, and it didn't cross my mind that I was alcoholic. It just crossed my mind that my head was swelling and I could drink. And we started drinking on the job after, you know, the last 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We'd get some beer and get some that. We drank, and things progressed. And then pretty soon I'm at the, you know, I was never going to be at the bar at noon drinking, being a big shot running my business on a cell phone. But that's where I was. And I went back to the job one day. This guy Stewart, some of you guys probably know him. I rode my motorcycle to the job site, and he says, "Landy, how are you going to get home?" And I said, "What? What do you mean? How am I going to get home? Same way I got here." He goes, "I think you should leave your bike here, and I'll give you a ride." And I was like, "No, I'm fine. I'm okay." And I realized that drinking. Now I didn't want to go to the job site because I'm drunk by noon. I reek of alcohol. You know, I got a good company and I have good men, but I'm a drunk and I can't really, you know, that guy, I was semi-embarrassed, semi-angry, but I never went back to his job site too much. And things started to go downhill and spiral, and I would, you know, back at the bar drinking. And, you know, I got a drunk driving. And I wasn't that drunk, you know, and I wasn't off in the ditch like the cop said, but nevertheless, I went to jail that night in Rosemont in front of the this trailer court. And the cop was nice. He left my car there and took me to jail. And I spent the night in the Mojave drunk tank, and they let me out at 5 in the morning. I didn't have no wallet, and I didn't have any money. And I panhandled down at the 7-Eleven market there in Mojave and got enough money to get on the phone, call my foreman at door, and he came and got me. And that trailer that my car was parked at was his house. So he got to watch his boss go to jail. Little bit of incomprehensible demoralization. But I had to go to 10 AA meetings, and I had to go to drunk driving school. So I got rid of the drunk driving school real quick, and then I had 10 AA meetings. And I thought, how do I do this? How do I go to Alcoholics Anonymous when you're not an alcoholic? You know? I drank all the time, but I wasn't alcoholic. I never thought I was alcoholic. So I finally go to my first meeting at the Open Door. And I'd had a few drinks, because that's what you do when you go to a meeting, you drink. At least that's what I thought. I saw my friend Steve in the corner, you know, because he worked at the Harley dealer and he had a panhead, and I thought he was cool, and we had, you know. And I went over and I sat down next to him and I said, "Steve, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Landy, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life." You know, and I slid my chair over a little bit. He wasn't that cool anymore. Was kind of done with him. And some girl was using some pretty bad language in there about God. And I had to open my big mouth and say, you know, you don't use that word in God in the same sentence, because, you know, I went to Grace Lutheran for, 6 years. I had a parochial sixth grade education, and I knew who God was. And they weren't real kind to me. They told me I was disrupting the meeting and sign your own card. And I did. I signed my own cards. I had my guys sign it, and that was it for Alcoholics Anonymous. One meeting, I had 9 to go. I got 9 signatures, turned my thing in, and that was the end of it. And so drinking became, it got to be tough to, you're out there drinking and driving, and you got a DUI. Cops really frown on that. I mean, nothing like today, but so I started parking my car a few blocks from the bar, and I'd walk to the bar and drink, and I'd walk back and get my car, and it got to be a real problem, so pretty soon I was calling a tow truck. I was calling Clark and Howard to come and get my truck, sit at Maxton's till midnight, 1 in the morning, and get towed home. And I get a call from Ray there, and he's like, Landy, we've been hauling you home. We're doing the books here. We've been hauling you home from the bar, quite a lot. And we think maybe you have a drinking problem. And I thought, wow, the bartenders aren't cutting me off. I'm a good, I had an extra set of keys so I could give to them and sneak out and drive home anyway. And then now I'm calling a tow truck, and now the tow truck company's going to cut me off. Now, this is some crap. This is just wrong, And so I switched to AV towing, me and my ego. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't know what's wrong with everybody, but I'm not an alcoholic. I like to drink, but I'm not an alcoholic. So my wife, she was drinking a lot, because water sinks its own level. If you've been around here a while, you'll find that out. She drank a lot. And she was a stay-at-home mom, and apparently the doctors had told her that if she didn't stop drinking, that she would die. And that's exactly what happened to her on October 7th, 2002, she died of liver cirrhosis. And I was like, so I told everybody she had a brain aneurysm, because I couldn't tell them she died of alcoholism, because that would make her alcoholic. And if she was alcoholic, then I'd be alcoholic. I ain't alcoholic, okay? I'm not an alcoholic. I drink a lot, but I don't, I'm a functioning alcoholic. I have a company, I have these people working, and, it's all a facade, it's all not real, it's all in my head. So after she passed, I really started drinking a lot, because I couldn't kill the pain. Outside issues and a lot of alcohol was what I was doing. And I got real drunk one night and fell down. I smashed my face wide open. Had some motorcycle part in my hand, a drink in the other, and I don't want to drop either one, so I broke the fall with my face, And I looked really good. I got some pictures on my phone because I remember what I looked like when I got here. My face was hamburger, and all I could say was, they'd say, Landy, what happened to you? And I said, you should see the other guy. You should see the other guy if you think I look bad. There was no fight. Just me and the earth. Just gravity. So I was at this bar. I was at Lucky's Bar up in Lake Hughes. I used to like to drink at Lucky's a lot. I know. I lived out here on 100th Street East and Avenue H, but I drove all the way to Lake Hughes because that was my home group bar. That's where I drink. I fall asleep in Noggles, getting an egg burrito at 1 in the morning. They're beating on the window, that kind of stuff. You're parked out in the desert, waiting for the sun to come up to know which way's the east, Puke out the window when it's up, that kind of stuff. But I'm not alcoholic. I come home from that bar that my friend Smitty, he was my foreman. He worked for me for a long time. Rest his soul, he passed. He didn't get this thing. He drugged me out of the bar April 6, 2003, and took my sorry ass to the east side at a Lucky's bar. And this is the bar I started drinking in at 19. And he pulled me out. I was 48 years old when he pulled me out. And I wanted to stop. I just wanted another drink and everything would be okay. You know, and I asked him to stop at Lucky's Bar, or at the Rock Store. It's a quarter mile from Lucky's, for those of you who have been to Lake Hughes. Stop at the bar and eat a drink. Quarter mile as we're going down the road. Go to Maxton's, go to the Britisher, stop at the Trap. I need a drink. He just kept going. I was like, I thought we were friends, you know? I need a drink and everything will be okay. I was in a lot of pain. So we get to my house on the east side and get a bottle out of the up on the counter and start drinking. And until I fell off the stool, smashed my face open again. The old scabs, you know, we like to pull the fresh scabs off with new scabs. I'm a mess. I don't know I'm a mess, but I'm a mess. I'm a hot mess. You know, my liver is in bad shape. You know, I liked a lot of painkillers, you know, they helped. But I went in that room that night and I laid down, you know, everything's spinning around and it's kind of like, ugh. You know, just, the alcohol stopped working. My brain said I needed a drink, but it wasn't working. It stopped working way before I got sober. So I'm laying in bed, and my wife enters the room, my late wife, and she sits and she holds my hand. She says, "You don't have to die from drugs and alcohol." And she stayed with me a long time. And she got a washcloth to clean my face. And she was in the bathroom washing out that washcloth, and I called her name, and she wasn't there. And I just passed out, whatever I did. And when I woke up in the morning, Smitty says, I was white as a ghost. He's like, "What happened to you?" I said, "You wouldn't just know." You know, I remember my friend Steve, that's who I called. You know, I think the hardest four-letter word there is to say in Alcoholics Anonymous is help. You know, because my pride and my ego, they don't let me say that. But Steve came, got me, and we went. And he took me to the open door. And they let me back in, you know, And, I started going to the open door, and I started going to the Arid Club at 6 o'clock at night. And, you know, I wasn't feeling it. And so I went to, someone said, go to the Grange. 6:30 in the morning. I'm a morning drinker, so I like a morning meeting. Joel was there. He saw me come in all my glory. Not an alcoholic, of course. Just beat to a pulp. And I remember going to the Grange and sitting down, and I went, and I was like, "What the hell was that?" Because I hadn't got from alcohol in a long time. But I sat there by the door, and I was like, and there was plumbers, electricians, framers, people that I knew that said, you know, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We're really glad you're here. We've been waiting for you." And I'm like, "What? Why would you be waiting for me?" You know? And that started my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. I started going to the Grange at 6:30 every morning. There was a guy there that every morning he said, "Man, I'm so grateful I didn't have to stop at the liquor store this morning." And that was the guy that I hit up after the meeting. I was like, I wanted to stop at the bar. And he'd been sober like 15 years, you know. And I understood that word. So my son, after my wife passed and I started going to these meetings, my son was really scaring me, and I started taking him to the therapist and trying to help him. He went a few times, and I kept going. And I was in there. And this is before I made it to AA. I'm backing up a little bit, but I went in there, and she said, "Where's your son?" And I said, "He's not coming." And she said, "You've been drinking?" And I said, "Yeah." She says, "It's 10 in the morning." I said, "I started drinking at 5. She said, "5? Do you think you're alcoholic?" And I said, "Absolutely not, but I drink all the time." And I wanted to share that with you guys because that's my state of denial before getting to Alcoholics Anonymous. I drink all the time, but I'm not an alcoholic. But I started doing the journey, and I started, I'd like to tell you, I got a sponsor, and I was reading a book and went right to doing the steps, but that's not my story. My story is that I don't know why, but I thought if I got myself in this mess, I could get myself out. Apparently some other guys are like-minded people around here think that way, but I knew there was a God. I knew there was a God that came and saved my life. That was the big deal. And I have never drank again. I'm the guy that just needed one more drink and everything would be okay. And I have not had a drink since April 7th, 2003. Just, you know, and I've been through all kinds of hell, but I've not drank. So when I'm working the steps and I'm starting to get into the book a little bit, my friend Jerry came and got me and goes, "Lindy, we're having a step meeting at the house. Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Sure, what time?" You know, and I went to his house and we started doing a first step. I started reading a book, started looking at this how powerless I was over everything. You know, and how unmanageable my life was. And I thought, my life's not that unmanageable. You know, my wife's gone, my children hate my guts, and my life is unmanageable, and my business is going down the drain, it's circling the drain. And, you know, the second step was came to believe in a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And I'm nuts. When I'm drinking like that, I'm absolutely nuts. And that third step was, made a decision, you know. And turned my will and my life over the care of God. And Jerry put me outside in his backyard with a white flag and told me to go outside and start saying the third step prayer till I surrendered. You know, and I was out there with his flag. I was like, "God, I hope nobody sees me." And I started saying that third step prayer. And we came in and we got on our knees. And I rode off that night on my motorcycle and God, did I feel good. You know, I was reborn. You know, I felt all that. I'm not in charge anymore. Joe remembers Jerry. And I'm not in charge. You know, everything's going to be okay. You know, and then we had to do that inventory. And Jerry was telling me, you know, "Lindy, we're going to start on this. You know, did you start doing some writing? Did you get some writing right now?" I said, "You know, Jerry, I'm starting to feel pretty good. I've made it back to the job. And I'm interested in work. And, you know, don't tell me what to do, basically. You can always tell an alcoholic. You just can't tell them a damn thing." Let's clean that up a little bit. And so as things got bad, I got a little resentment against Jerry, and I stopped going to that 6:30 meeting because I didn't want anybody telling me what to do. And started going to the open door at noon and the Arid Club at 6. And then I stopped going to the open door at noon and just hit the Arid Club at 6. And I was starting to get really, really irritable. You take alcohol away from an alcoholic and you start getting really sideways. And I started getting really sideways. And I went in there with a 90-day chip at the Arid Club. And I saw my old friend Don. And the last time he saw me, I was in a blackout at the market with about 8 half-gallons of vodka and a bunch of steaks. And he said, "If you ever want help, call me." And I was like, "Help? Look at me. I got it going on. Steaks, vodka, I'm good." And he says, "Well, how do you feel? You know, how do you feel? You know, when I got in the thing, he goes, "You're an AA, God, give me a big hug. I'm so happy for you." He says, "How do you feel, Lindy?" And I said, "Well, honestly, I feel like drinking." He goes, "Well, come on, let's go." And I said, "What?" We start walking out the door at the Air Club towards his car. I say, "You're going to drink too, right?" He goes, "No, just you." And we got right across the car to each other, and I said, "But Don, I'm in AA." And he says, "Lenny, make up your mind." So I left him because he scared the crap out of me. I went back. I went over. There was a meeting at the Open Door that night. And I had made a decision because we relapse before we drink. I had made a decision that I was going to drink after the meeting because just I'd forgotten that I had been, you know, put in this place because I am a slow learner and a fast forgetter. You know, it's a defect of character. But I learned how to, I went into that meeting, and my friend Art was sitting there, and he looked at me and he said, "Landy, how you doing?" And I lost it. I just lost it. And we went to Denny's that night afterwards, and we drank coffee and we read that book till, I don't know, wee hours of the morning, many pots of coffee. And the next morning I went to Ventura and I wrote out a couple pages. And I remember saying to him, I called him, I said, "I can't do this. I can't write anymore. So get on your knees and pray." Click. You know how they like to do that. So I did it. I got on my knees and I prayed. And I asked God, "You help me write." And I wrote some more. And I called him back. And I said, I prayed and I wrote a bunch more and I can't write no more. And I'm going to go to a meeting. He said, "Take your book with you." So I took my book and I went to this, some of you probably know where Main Street upstairs. There's a, used to be in Ventura meeting up there. And I was up there and a lot of weird stuff happened, you know. It was just one of those crazy meetings where a lot of bicycles out front and a few shopping carts and, you know, those guys. And long story is I got a lot written. And he met me at like 60th West and we went out to my house and we sat down and we were in there like 7-8 hours. And I realized a lot of stuff about me. I realized a lot of stuff that I had done that I caused all this. You know, I've been blaming everybody for everything all my life. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I found out I actually played a part in this. I had a full role in everything that's ever went on in my entire life. And, you know, the big thing that I really realized is that my wife had made amends to me and came back and saved me. And, the obsession was removed. That's why it's so important to make these amends and clean up our wreckage. So I did those steps, and we looked at the defects of characters, and I started out on the amends list, and you know, I was able to go out and make amends, and it didn't go well. There's, you know, the children didn't accept the amends well. A lot of people did, some people didn't, and I learned that I needed to accept that it wasn't for them, that it was for me, that I needed to learn, you know, the forgiveness, and it really brought out freedom, and I don't want to skip that. I didn't want to, you know, and I continue to do that today. This is just the first encounter, you know, and you know, that's step 10, continue to take personal inventory, you know, and I work on that. I work on that all the time, and that in 11, you know, saw through prayer and meditation, I have a conscious contact with my higher power today. He's always with me. I talk to him all the time. Every morning I've got my books, I do my reading, I do my meditation, I get grateful, you know, I get real grateful. You know, and 12 talks about having had a spiritual awakening. Well, I've had one. And then, and my job is to, when you know, to hold up my hand when they say if anybody will sponsor somebody and take them, sit with them, take time, take them through the book. You know, I love to get people in the car and drive to this meeting. Thank you, Mark, for having this meeting. Thanks for, you know, I liked this meeting a lot. I missed you guys, you know. But that's my job. My job is to give this thing away, is to help the next guy and have some compassion and have some empathy for the alcoholic that's not an alcoholic, because I know what that's like. Go help them. Go help another alcoholic. There's nothing better. You want to find out what's wrong with you? Go sponsor somebody. You'll find all your defects. You find everything that's wrong with you. You know, I heard a guy say that a long time ago. I was like, but that's true. That's my experience, you know. And what's like today? Man, I'm blessed. I love saying, get in the car, guys. Get in the car. You know, I've always... I know that Al Russell used to come up to Lake Hughes all the time, and he'd bring people, and he'd say, I brought those guys so I could drive in the carpool lane, you know? But that wasn't the truth, you know? He did that to bring people to just... The most important thing your sponsor can say is get in the car. Where are we going? Just get in. You know, and today, you know, I'm free. I've retired. Been retired a long time. My mother got really sick, and I stayed for her, and I helped her. And she was staying I had her at the Emeritus in Bakersfield because she needed memory care. She was 92 years old, and you know, I got to sit with my mom, and she died April 8th. My sobriety date's April 7th. She passed on April 8th. And I was sitting with her in the hospital, and the hospice nurse was there, and a pastor was there. And he's saying, you keep talking to your mom. You can keep talking because she can hear you. And then I said, Landy, are you going to Tehachapi to take a cake tonight? And I said, no, I can't do that. I got to stay here with mom. The pastor says, no, you can go. In the hospital, she's going to wait for you. You know, and I went to the meeting and I took a cake. I think it was 12 years. And I took a cake. And the next morning, early, I was back to Tehachapi. And back to Bakersfield. And I was holding my mom's hand and talking to her. And, you know, about noon, she slipped away. And I got to be there. That's a blessing. And meanwhile, I got to take care of my mother-in-law. You know, everyone says, I thought your mom passed. I said, she did. But I got to take care of my mother-in-law, my wife's mom. And she lived to be 98. And I got to take care of her. And I, you know, at first I went kind of kicking and screaming, but I got up to a point where I really got to take care of her. And I got to be grateful, as I didn't have to take care of her. I got to take care of her. And then when we laid her to rest, it all made sense. Because the pastor came over and he hugged me. He says, you can go now, Landy. You know, you can go. I'm like... So I went to Montana and I bought 20 acres and I start building this dream home. That's all blessings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not supposed to get that. I'm supposed to be dead a long time ago. And I get to go there. My home group's the Wilsaw group, and we meet every Tuesday night, 7:00. You know, and they say to me, hey, isn't this a long drive for you, Landy? I said, no. Well, it's 50 miles. I said, yeah. I've been driving to the Grange. My home group is the Grange. Men stag 8:00 on Wednesday night for a lot of years. I drive down here. It's like, this is what, I mean, any length. I'd go to any length for a drink. And I'll go to any length to go to a meeting. Because I get this wonderful gift. I feel so blessed. You know, and to have this family of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like, it's absolute. Mark knows, you guys know what I'm talking about. You know, I go, up in Helena, Montana, and there's people that know me. And I was with this girl, Jackie. She goes, what are you, the mayor? And I said, no, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. We know everybody. And everybody knows us. You know, I had the privilege of getting speakers for a lot of years in Tehachapi. And I got to meet, that's how I met Mark. You know, that's how I met people. And then we form this relationship. We go to dinner. We get to meet each other. And then we go to their meeting. And that's the gift here. You know, we get to keep, you know, meeting people. It's a big deal. You know, it starts off with washing ashtrays, you know, because they smoked in meetings when I got sober. And then the best job is greeting, because you really get to know some names and you get to know some people. But when I got to Tehachapi and I got to... being a secretary, and then in the speaker meeting at Ben's. I don't know if any of you guys remember that, but, you know, when I got there, I got this commitment. And Kent gave it to me. He goes, Landy, I've been doing this for a year and a half, and no one wants it, and I'm leaving the keys on the table. And I got on the phone, and I called Art, and I go, there's not going to be a speaker meeting anymore. And he goes, I said, Kent's leaving tonight, and he's serious. You know, and at the break, I told him, Kent, nobody takes it. I'll do it. you know. We had candy commitment, get the steps, get the things out, get there early, make coffee. And this girl, Jeannie, shows up. She goes, "Landy, how come you're hogging all the commitments?" I said, "What?" She said, "Why are you hogging all the commitments?" I said, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And she goes, "You don't do all of those." And then she started getting people. She started getting a coffee maker. Pretty soon, all I was a secretary, and I was like, "Hey, it's pretty cool." And then I got the commitment of being speakers, and getting speakers for that meeting, which lasted a long, long time. And being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous is really, it's what we do here. I'm a selfish and self-centered individual. I don't want to do anything for anybody but me. And you guys showed me that that's not how life works. That's not what puts a smile on my face. That's not what makes me happy. What makes me happy is coming down here and coming to this meeting and meeting all of you. And I feel sorry for Denise and Bart because they had to hear me all the way here, and then they have to hear me here, and then they have to hear me all the way home, and apologize for that in advance. But it's really an honor and a privilege to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I could have missed all of this. You know, I like to say I got to AA the day before I died. You know, I stayed out there a long time. You know, and that disease, the disease of alcoholism, told me I don't have a disease. You know, I don't have a disease. There's nothing wrong with me. It's you that's the problem. I'm hoping that I get to move to Montana in May and get this house built. You know, I was born here in Lancaster, and I'm ready to go. I'll be back to visit, but I'm hoping I get to go. It's all something that I could have missed, but the whole thing is there's all these people in recovery. There's beautiful people. My neighbors they're very few and far between, but my one neighbor says, "Landy, where do you go every Tuesday night? You know? You're gone every Tuesday. You're always gone." And I was like, "I'm taking my..." And I got to... I get... You know, I finally told him. I go, I go to Wilsaw. "Well, what do you do in Wilsaw?" And he kind of like pried it at me. I said, "Look, I'm a drunk. You know, I'm a drunk. I go to AA in Wilsaw. You know? And that's what I do." He goes, "Well, how long has it been since you drank?" And I said, "Oh, 21, 22 years. "And you still go to meetings?" I said, "Yeah, I still go to meetings. I'm not cured. You know, I get a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. You know, and I'm the baby at my home group in Wilsaw." They were real happy to see me because, you know, there's like 10 of them, 11 of them. They're all 30, 40, 50 years sober. Got a new guy like me come up. And so I've just, you know, these blessings that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous just never stop ending. And today I have this faith in a higher power that I never had before. And I have to ground myself on a daily basis that sometimes a little fear sets in. How's this going to work? What's going to happen? I'm going to sell my property. I'm going to relocate. You know, what happens when I'm 85 and I'm out of money? You know, I'm not 85 and I'm not broke yet, you know, but my mind takes me there. But I get to come back to this, you know, this spot where I have this power and plug in. Because I know that, you know, how'd I get here? How'd I get up here tonight? How did I get to Alcoholics Anonymous? I know how I got here, from a loving God that cares for me. And he had purpose. He had purpose for me. You know, all this was God's will, you know. My wife was alcoholic. She didn't get what I got. She got, you know, we seek us into insanity or death. You know, she saved my life. You know, she saved my life. And all this, and it's like there was a purpose. And when I buried her mother, I knew what that purpose was. That I was supposed to, I was here for a reason. Not that, you know, I just, if for the new guys, you know, you don't have to drink, you know, if you don't want to. And even if you want to, you know. I've had to pick up the phone before, and it's heavy. And that four-letter word comes out, help. You know, help me. And I'm not too proud to pick up the phone and say I'm hurting today. I have a sponsor. You know, I have a sponsor. And he knows I'm accountable to him. And he knows what I'm doing. He knows, you know, we don't talk once a month. We don't talk every couple weeks. We talk a couple times a week. And I share my life with this man. I admit it to God, another human being. I mean, he knows what's going on. I'm accountable to somebody. I need to be accountable. You know, and it helps him. It helps him. It helps me. That's what we do here. That's why we raise our hands and say, hey, the best thing that's ever happened to me is you guys. Thanks for letting me share.